Vrinihi kamam ripayanmano gatam. Matas tvam otana padevi sankitaha. Varam varar hom bhujanabha padayo. Anantaram tvam vayamanga sushruma. Vinihi. Please ask. Kamam. Desire. Nripa. O king. Yat. Whatever. Managatam. Within your mind. Mataha. From me. Tvam. You. O Tanapade. O son of Maharaj Uttanapada. Avishankitaha. Without hesitation. Baram. Benediction. Benediction. Vara arkaha. Worthy to take benedictions. Ambuja. Lotus flower. Nabha. Whose navel. Padayo. At his lotus feet. Anantaram. Constantly. Tvam. About you. Vayam. We. Anga. Dear Dhruva. Sushruma. Have heard. My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapada, we have heard. Sushruma, that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy. I'm just reading this, but taking my time. I'm just trying to work out where this fits into the word for word. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please, therefore, ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. So who is speaking here? Let me have a look. Kuvera said. Kuvera. No, well, actually, Dhanada Uvacha. The master of the treasury. Kuvera said. So, okay, right. We've got the word vara here, one who gives benedictions. Purport, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of King Uttanapada. Is this actually working? If you want to get yourself in trouble, that's the spot to go. I think this is. I think the battery's gone on this because there was a light before, but now let there be light. Dhruva Maharaj, the son of King Uttanapada, was already known throughout the universe as a great devotee of the Lord, constantly thinking of his lotus feet. Such a pure, uncontaminated devotee of the Lord is worthy to have all the benedictions that can be offered by the demigods. He does not have to worship the demigods separately for such benedictions. Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods, and he is personally offering whatever benediction Dhruva Maharaj would like to have from him. Srila Bilva Mangala Thakur stated, therefore, that for persons who engage in the devotional service of the Lord, all material benedictions wait like maid servants. Mukti Devi is just waiting at the door of the devotee to offer liberation, or more than that, at any time. Simply by rendering transcendental loving service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can have all the benedictions of the world without separate endeavour. Lord Kuvera said to Dhruva Maharaj that he had heard that Dhruva was always in samadhi, or thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. In other words, he knew that for Dhruva Maharaj there was nothing desirable within the three material worlds. He knew that Dhruva would ask for nothing but to remember the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord constantly. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yad Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, is it surprising that Dhruva Maharaj would not want anything from Kuvera? Is it surprising? No. Why? He's already purified. Yeah. And because of that purification, what has he got? What is he? Pure. You already said he was pure. He's purified, that means he must be pure. But what does that mean?
Content.
He's content. What's a word for a devotee who's content? What's a word? What's a name for a devotee who's content? Starts with an A. Huh? Atmarama. Yeah, he's Atmarama. He's self-satisfied. Huh? Nādanām nājanām nāsundarīm kavitam vā jagadīśa kamāyē. Janmani janmani ishvare bhavatad mamma hoitiki twayi. Isn't it? This describes how nādanām, no money, nājanām, no followers, nāsundarī, no beautiful people, right? Or women, at least. Usually translated. But that's quite unusual when you think about it. Unusual that somebody has no material desires. That doesn't mean a devotee doesn't have any desire. Right? Doesn't mean, you know, it actually it's impossible to be desireless, because that's the nature of the soul is to. The nature of being is to have desires. Right? Anybody here doesn't have any desires? My stomach's rumbling. That means I'm desiring breakfast soon. Right? But that's okay. So long as we have material bodies, we'll have desires, even material desires sometimes. For those of us who are not purified, like Dhruva Maharaj. But because a devotee experiences a higher taste, right, this is param drishtva nivartate, doesn't follow the path of materialism, but rather follows the path of devotion. Which means one is engaged in activities, engaged in the nine processes of devotional service, Ravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. And by engaging in those nine processes, one converts or one purifies the tendency towards sense gratification at the lower level of identifying with the body, and engages in sense gratification at the level of anandamaya, right? The topmost of the five koshas. Right? We were talking about this the other day at Urban Yoga. The top level, because otherwise we're at the level of anamaya. I eat, therefore I am. Right? Or the next level up, more elevated, is I am what I do. Like when we meet people, I'm a doctor. Right? Oh, you're a doctor. Right? So that's based on what you do. But of course there's a higher level, manamaya. And that's, you know, this is the philosophers. I think, therefore I am. The famous statement of Sartre. And then above that, the level of jnana or vijnana maya, which is we understand that I'm not this body, that I'm a spirit soul. But then above that is the actions of the soul, the actions of the spiritually activated being, which is what we should be, right? And the spiritually activated being at that level is a functional spirit soul, anandamaya. So long as we have a material body, we may have material desires. Right? And what's the basic material desire? to prove this point, basic material desire. At that first level, what is it? Food, yeah. Food. So even an advanced devotee will have to eat, which is so remarkable about somebody like Raghunath Das, right? Raghunath Das was just surviving on 6 drops of buttermilk every second day. So that's like, whoa, how do you do that? Because we all know that if we don't have 6 meals a day, then we, you know, we're going to get upset, right? Oh, let's say 6 meals every 2 days. He has 6 drops of buttermilk every 2 days. We have to have 6 meals, right? Otherwise, we'll get disturbed. So this is that, but we purify that base, if you like, that base desire, we purify that by taking Krishna's prasadam and eating in a regulated fashion. Huh? So the characteristic of a devotee, and this is even somebody at the clearing stage of devotional practice will experience this, that satisfaction and that exhilaration and the the higher taste, param drishtva, that higher taste in the performance of their devotional practice, and so will be satisfied. You know, if we're chanting Hare Krishna in the clearing stage, because even in the Namabhas stage one gets liberation, right? This is according to Haridas Thakur. Even at the stage of offensive, well, chanting, one gets purified, liberated. Because here, and this is why we should not discount the practice of chanting Hare Krishna and minimize it or not appreciate its potency. Because here we see with Dhruva Maharaj, he's a pure devotee. And what are some of the characteristics? Can anybody tell me? What are some of the characteristics that we can identify in this verse that tell us Dhruva Maharaj is a very exalted devotee? What are some of the characteristics mentioned here? Gopal. Yeah. And what else? Prabhupada mentions in the purport. What else? As a consequence. Huh? Cheating. You read. But it's okay. He was thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord as a consequence. Or they go together, actually. And so this is, and Prabhupada mentions here, for the devotees who are chanting Hare Krishna, but I'm adding that, but Prabhupada mentions here that for persons who engage in the devotional service of the Lord, all material benedictions wait like maid servants. So why are people scared of serving Krishna? Why are people fearful to surrender to Krishna when all benedictions are waiting for us? Why are we scared to surrender?
Falsely.
Huh?
Falsely.
False ego. Maybe, yeah, could be. Why don't we surrender? Well, maybe you do. It's just my problem. We sometimes think that Krishna will take... Actually, his name is Hari, right? So what does that mean? One who takes away everything. We know, we're materially attached. We're somewhat materially attached, which means we need to surrender to Krishna and let him look after us. And of course, that's what we do when we're chanting Hare Krishna. We're praying to Krishna, please look after me. Please engage me in your devotional service. Huh? Isn't that what we're praying for? Because then when it gets too intense, we say, whoa, maybe that's not what I want. Simply by rendering transcendental loving service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can have all the benedictions of the world without separate endeavor. Because Prabhupada says right at the beginning, one doesn't have to worship the demigods. And why do people mostly worship the demigods? What's that? Quick results. Yeah. They want things. Whereas a symptom of a devotee, we see here with Dhruva Maharaj, is that he doesn't want anything except service. Najanam, najanam, nasundarim. No money, no followers, no wealth. So we need to, these are considered, what are they considered? What are they called? Money, followers, influence, what is that called? Huh? Aishwarya, what's that? Opulence, right? But what else is it called?
Material desires.
Material desires, yeah. Anartha, right? There's that which is artha or essential. These things are considered anartha for a devotee. They're not necessary. And when one's engaged, actually engaged in devotional service, then one is not interested in these things. When we chant Hare Krishna with sincerity and with attention, then gradually it purifies. Atasri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved. What is it? Nabha. Shrimbatam. Hearing, right? Somebody else. We say it begins with the tongue, which means usually we hear from others. So somebody's speaking. Hearing is the beginning of devotional service, but that means somebody's speaking. So somebody's tongue is working right when we're hearing. Usually it's the devotees or Krishna giving us the knowledge of self-realization. Then the next stage is kirtanam, which is the tongue, actually. Right? So we're chanting Hare Krishna. And our devotional service begins with the tongue. Although, you know, it may begin also with the tongue taking prasadam. Right? I remember when it wasn't my first interaction with the devotees. Second interaction with the devotees, I was driving with a friend of mine. His family name was Square, right in the middle of Adelaide. And the devotees were coming down the square with that big set of them. And this big, big tall statue of Lord Chaitanya. And Rajalakshmi. When I joined the temple here, there was a at night there was a guard that would stay awake all night to keep an eye out on the safety of the temple. Right? I used to think, why? How come we have to guard the temple at night? Remember this, Russell? Yeah. And because the deprogrammers would come in. And actually at that time, the deprogrammers were saying to the devotees, we know somebody who's out to get you guys, but if you pay us some money, we'll keep them away. Of course, it was them. This is what standover merchants do. We're here to protect you. Give us some money and we'll look after you. We'll protect you from the people who are out to get you, which is us, actually. I thought, what is all this about? Until one morning, we used to get up at 3 o'clock every morning. There'd be a race to the bathroom at 3 o'clock. There was even a joke that some of the devotees who were keen to be first in the shower would dip their toothbrushes in the fish pond on their way through so that they could be cleaning their teeth quick before they got to the bathroom. So anyway, I came back from having a shower, and then all of a sudden I heard this boom. And somebody had fired a shotgun in Korma was putting his tilak on. And they fired a shotgun through Prabhupada's window as well, you know, the glass window. And there were shotgun pellets in the ceiling of Prabhupada's room. I thought, whoa, now I know why we've got a guard. There's people out to get us. This was my experience of Krishna consciousness when I first started coming to the temple was quite, I thought I was joining a movement of peace and love. Then we got shotguns being fired at us. And I'm like, whoa, this is serious. So anyway, Raja Lakshmi, who was famous for being kidnapped, came running over to our car, and she gave us some, you know, bundi. Well, it's not laddu; it's round, right? I think the devotees called it bundi laddu, but actually it was round. Usually, laddu means square, isn't it? You know, what do we call it? With the bundi and the dates and raisins, and so she gave us this prasadam, and my friend gave me one of the balls, and he said, and I said, what are we going to do with this? I was going to chuck it out the window. I thought, oh, what's this? You know, my parents always told me, don't take sweets from strangers on the street, right? You never know what's going to be in it. So my natural response was to throw it away. But he said, no, we'll eat it. I said, oh, okay. He'd had more experience with the devotees than I had. So that was my first prasadam, right? So Krishna was engaging me with the tongue. Actually, before that, I got a card. And it had... I was walking down the street, and this devotee... And I knew it was a devotee. Probably because he had a wig on. You could tell the Hare Krishnas because they all had wigs. Which is bizarre when you think about it, right? Because we've all got bald heads. So what were people were thinking, what's wrong with these Hare Krishnas? They shave their heads and then they put wigs on. What kind of crazy people are they? Huh? So I knew and I made a determination. He's going to ask me for a donation and I'm not going to give it to him. But he didn't. Completely disarmed me and just gave me a card. And that was it. And I was disappointed because he didn't ask me for a donation. But he completely disarmed me. So I thought, oh, okay, all right. But on the card was an invitation to the Sunday feast, which I didn't take up for many years. But But on the card was a Maha Mantra. Right? And I knew it was a mantra. And I knew that mantras were for peace. Right? And happiness. So I learned how to chant the mantra from that card. Right? So again, being engaged by the tongue. Right? This is how we make progress in bhakti. The beginning of bhakti is to hear from somebody who's speaking or to start chanting. Right? So somebody's tongue is being engaged. But when we become absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna, then if we're doing it properly, we're being purified. Right? And you feel it. I remember I used to chant and I would be in a lot of anxiety because I was, my father and I weren't getting on. We weren't seeing eye to eye at all. And it was an intense time in my father's career because he had been awarded a scholarship to go to London to study at London University. And this would be a big boost to his career. And for him, I was a bit of a disturbance because I wasn't fitting into his plans. And I remember I went to my father and I said, I'm leaving on Thursday. I think this was Tuesday. I said, I'm leaving home. And my dad said, as far as I'm concerned, you can go now. Now, my father's not an ungenerous person, nor is he nasty, but I had a particular way of disturbing him. I knew how to press all of the buttons on my dad so that he would get upset. You know, it's one way of getting attention. If you want to get attention from your parents, don't do what they tell you to do. So I discovered this worked very well early in life. So anyway, I was in a lot of anxiety and I'd think, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? Who's going to look after me? My parents were leaving to go to Europe and I didn't have anywhere to stay. So I knew that I had a mantra and I knew if I chanted a mantra, then something would happen. I discovered by chanting Hare Krishna that my anxiety would go away. So I thought, whoa, that's interesting. That's powerful. So if we're chanting Hare Krishna with some focus and with some attention, then we'll get results. Right? Have you tried it? Sometimes we think, oh, this chanting Hare Krishna doesn't work. Right? So hard. My mind hurts. Right? But sometimes we're chanting Hare Krishna, we feel so ecstatic, we think, oh, I don't want to stop. This is so good. Huh? And in that state of consciousness, we're not interested in material outcomes. In that state of consciousness, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we feel like, Krishna, I'm yours. Whatever you want, I'm happy to do. Right? This is a symptom of a devotee. Like we see here with Dhruva Maharaj. Krishna, I am yours, whatever you want. I don't want anything but to serve you. Right? Of course, this isn't as elevated as the residence of Vrindavan. You know, in Vaikuntha, the devotee thinks, I am yours. But highest consciousness is the devotees think, Krishna, you're mine. Right? Krishna, you're mine. But of course, we shouldn't imitate that. That will come later. But at least we should be chanting at the clearing stage. This is a symptom of an intermediate devotee. Also a symptom of a beginner, that one chants Hare Krishna, right? But if we're making progress in our yoga practice, which is what we're doing, then we should be arriving, or we should be at the stage of the intermediate devotee where we're clearing out the material desires and we're just praying for Krishna's protection and for Krishna's service. The devotee's not looking for anything material. And it's not that we don't need anything material, because we do. But a devotee knows it'll be provided, right? That all outcomes, all positive, and Prabhupada mentions that here, right? To be a devotee is therefore an exalted position, Prabhupada says. If we're following the process of bhakti, which in our case is chanting Hare Krishna, then we should arrive, or we should be arriving at this point fairly quickly. This is a symptom of a devotee who's on the clearing stage, because the process of chanting Hare Krishna is so powerful that one will experience that state of consciousness very quickly if we're chanting Hare Krishna properly, and if we're chanting 16 rounds every day, we should arrive at that state of consciousness at least at the end of our 16 rounds. This is the potency of chanting Hare Krishna. So we may wake up with a woolly head, right? Or we may have a woolly head before we chant Hare Krishna, which means some confusion, right? Or some bewilderment by material desires. But if one's chanting Hare Krishna with attention, paying attention to the sound of the Maha Mantra, and surrendering ourselves at the lotus feet of the holy name, which is really what we should be doing, chanting Hare Krishna, then one will come to this point, that clearing stage, very quickly, where one experiences this dependence upon Krishna. Krishna becomes everything for the devotee who surrenders unto him. So we see that here with Dhruva Maharaj. It's a symptom of devotional service, a symptom of devotional practice. And we can arrive at that state very quickly if we chant Hare Krishna with focus and attention. Such that here, Mukti Devi is waiting at the door of the devotee to offer liberation. Or more than that, right? So many people think liberation is the ultimate goal, but here, for a devotee, liberation is just the beginning. That comes for anybody, even if they're chanting Hare Krishna at the offensive stage, they get liberation. So if we get to the point of clearing, then we'll be at the point of beyond liberation. That's pretty amazing. Huh? There's that story of was it Ramchandra Khan? When Haridas Thakur was praising the glories of the holy name, and Ramchandra Khan said, that can't be possible that by chanting Hare Krishna you can get liberation. What was it? What did he say? Something about chopping off Haridas Thakur's nose, right? And Haridas Thakur said, I'll chop off my own nose if this is not the case. He was so convinced, right? So we should be like that. We should be convinced that by chanting Hare Krishna, we can achieve everything. There is nothing that can't be achieved by the practice of chanting the holy name. Then we'll see in ourselves the manifestation of this mood of surrender that we see in the heart of Dhruva Maharaj, we'll see that in ourselves. And so in one sense, you know, by the proper practice of chanting Hare Krishna, we will achieve this position of being freed from material desires. Anatta. Not being attracted to those things that are unnecessary or inessential. But by the chanting of Hare Krishna, we'll appreciate that pure devotional service to Krishna will satisfy all desires. And we'll also have material facility. Huh? We see that. We chant Hare Krishna and Krishna just gives us everything. Not that we want it, these things, but Krishna will look after us. Okay, does anybody have any comments or questions? The question has to relate to what we were talking about. Let's go for Philip first.
Why don't we take any more the big statue of Lord Chaitanya out of this on the street?
What's that?
You mentioned this big statue of Lord Chaitanya.
Yes.
Why don't we take him out anymore? Like I saw his pictures, so I'm
listening. Because he's in Mwilumbah and we're in Melbourne. Why don't we take him out? And, you know, I think he's too big to fit under the verandas of Swanson Street. They do. They take him on Rathiatra's up in Mwilumbah. They do take him out. They still do. Yeah. He can be pulled apart. He's in bits. So you assemble him and. So I will. Up until recently, which means like 10 years ago, I remember him going out. Yep. Quite impressive, actually. Quite impressive. I think Krishna's first. Regarding what? Yeah. He's seen a picture of him in Collins Street. Yeah. Actually, that was those pictures. He said he saw a picture of him in Collins Street. Yeah, it's big. He's about 12 feet tall. Okay. I agree with that. Yeah.
Told Haridas that he will cut his nose, and then Haridas told that he can also cut his nose. Then what did happen?
What happened?
After that?
Well, Ramchandra Khan was very offensive to Haridas Thakur. Right? Hang on, there's a story here. So, there was a big uproar. When Haridas Thakur, because he said, how can just chanting the holy name give liberation? Right? And so he made that comment, you know, some threat that I'll cut your nose off. If it doesn't give liberation, right, I'll cut your nose off. And Haridas Thakur said, if it doesn't give liberation, I'll cut my own nose off. But the assembled devotees were very upset by the offensive nature of Ramchandra Khan. So what happened was, Ramchandra Khan, he was a tax collector, wasn't he? Was he the one who was a tax collector?
His name's actually Gopal Chakravarti.
Oh, Gopal Chakravarti. Yeah, okay, thank you. So anyway, Gopal Chakravarti was offensive to Haridas Thakur. What was happening, because he was a tax collector, and you know, tax collectors in those days sometimes used to dip their hands into the funds of the king's treasury. When they would collect the tax, they would keep something for themselves. Right? I think this is a tradition of tax collectors in India. This is what they do. This is how you become wealthy. You become a tax collector for the king. If you give the king enough money, he's satisfied with you and you keep some for yourself. Is that right? In fact, some tax collectors just keep money for themselves. They don't even represent the king. So anyway, the Nawab found out, he worked out that Gopal Chakravarti was keeping some money for himself. So he came to his house and plundered it, right? And then slaughtered a cow in the mandap of the house. So he got some heavy reaction for his offensive behaviour, not only to Haridas Thakur, but also ostensibly to the king. And so his house and family were plundered, and they killed a cow on the... So that's, in those days, that would have been the ultimate insult to the Hindus, right? This is what the Muslims would do to insult you. Plunder your property and then kill a cow. So that's what happened to Gopal Chakravarti after he made that offence. Huh? Back to Ramchandra Khan. Oh, okay. Anyway, what's the correct story then?
I'm only looking it up as you're talking.
Okay, righto. What's that? Oh, that was Gopal Chakravarti had leprosy. But wasn't it Ramchandra Khan who had the... That was Haridas Thakur, and he was the one who tried to entice Haridas Thakur with the prostitute. Right? So who was it? Gopal Chakravarti's... okay, got it mixed up. So Gopal Chakravarti, that's what happened. Yeah, he offended Haridas Thakur, is that right? And his nose... he got leprosy and his nose fell off. Got my stories mixed up. Is that right? You know that story, huh?
I read in the next
condensed. Condensed. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for correcting me. So don't offend the devotees and the holy name. Otherwise, your nose might fall off. That's the moral of the story. Thanks, Hayagriva.
Sometimes, as you said, that we should be born in chanting, and we should be, feel like chanting is good for us. But sometimes we feel like my hands are paining and all that. So how
your hands are paining when you chant?
Sometimes we feel like that.
That's interesting.
How to overcome it?
How to overcome it? The paining of the hands?
Sometimes you feel like I don't want to do it or something.
You don't want to do it?
Sometimes you feel like that.
Okay. How often? How often do you feel not chanting? Every day? Every second day? Once a week?
I don't know.
Huh?
I don't know.
You don't know. But you have that. That's it. Yeah, I met a devotee the other day who said that whenever I chant Hare Krishna, then bad things happen to me. And I get very bad headaches and I can't chant. Huh? Well, Rupa Goswami says that our tongue is afflicted with the jaundice of ignorance. So that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, it feels like poison. Right? Or very bitter. Because ordinarily, the chanting of Hare Krishna is sweet and like sugar candy. Have you had the experience of chanting Hare Krishna and you don't want to stop? Anybody had that experience? Somebody must have had that experience. Huh? Have you ever had the experience of chanting Hare Krishna and you just feel so happy that you don't want to stop? One person, two people, three, maybe all of us. These are all very humble devotees. Or they're in ecstasy all of the time. They don't want to admit it. But we feel it. But then some days we don't want to chant Hare Krishna. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yes. I've never had the experience where my hand hurts though. My head hurts. You know, we're chanting Hare Krishna and it feels like we're chewing a cardboard box. Right? So this is considered to be the disease of ignorance. That the chanting of Hare Krishna, which is normally sweet to the tongue, it tastes bitter. So Prabhupada gives the example, Rupa Goswami gives the example, that when you have jaundice and you take sugar candy, right, then when you take sugar candy, it tastes bitter. Or mumps. Anybody had mumps? You know what mumps is? Your throat swells up. When you eat things, my mum used to always give me a Dispirin, which is a painkiller, because mumps is quite painful, with honey in the morning. But when I taste the honey, it just, ooh, it was bitter. Maybe the Dispirin also bitter. So when you've got jaundice, the taste of sugar is bitter, but sugar candy is the cure, right? Sugar candy is the cure for jaundice. But when you taste the sugar candy, which is naturally sweet, it tastes bitter. So when we chant Hare Krishna with the disease of avidya or ignorance, initially it may taste bitter. Right? So what's the cure? The cure is to keep chanting. Right? And when you keep chanting, then you get to the point where you realize, oh, this is fantastic. Why did it taste so bitter before? Now I chant Hare Krishna, I feel so happy, I don't want to stop. You ever felt like that? Or you just chant Hare Krishna because your mum and dad tell you to? Huh? Not because? You just do it.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel happy chanting Hare Krishna?
Kind of.
Kind of. Well, keep chanting. Don't stop. One day you'll feel so happy, you'll cry. Right? You ever felt so happy, you cry? Huh? Anybody chanted Hare Krishna have felt so happy that they started crying? Yep. Nobody's going to admit it. One person's admitting that they chant Hare Krishna and sometimes they cry. Is that right? It's okay. It's all right to cry when you chant Hare Krishna. Actually, it's desirable. Right? Because not false tears, right? But real tears of ecstasy. That's okay. That's what Lord Chaitanya went to his spiritual master and he said, what kind of a mantra have you given me? When I chant Hare Krishna, I fall on the ground and I cry. What's going on here? You've given me a mantra that makes me go crazy. So, what does that mean? What does it mean?
That you have jaundice of ignorance and
Yeah, in the beginning, not always, but sometimes when we're chanting Hare Krishna, it may taste bitter because we've got the disease of ignorance in our tongue. And so when we're chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes it just tastes horrible. Okay, who's had that experience? When you chant Hare Krishna, you feel so bad. Who's had that experience? Let's see if anybody's going to admit to that, at least. One more, two people. What's wrong with the rest of you guys? Huh? But this is, you know, bhakti. This is why Lord Chaitanya was criticized by the sannyasis of Varanasi. Why are you hanging out with the sentimentalists? They're chanting, they're crying. You know, you should be sober. Study the Vedanta. Right? This is the... And you see it, actually. When people come to the temple, they stand before Radha Ballabha. Right? And all the devotees are jumping up and down. Haribo, Haribo. Right? And we're being looked down upon. Oh, you sentimental Hare Krishnas. Right? But we're not sentimental because there is a deep and expansive philosophy of chanting Hare Krishna, and it's based on the exploration of these emotions and these emotions in relationship to our feelings for Krishna. Our feelings for the devotees. Actually, it's not something to be shied away from, right? You know, if we're in a kirtan and, you know, we're all just standing before the deities, and sometimes you can do that, right? But very often, if we're in a kirtan and we're experiencing the mellows of chanting Hare Krishna, then what are the symptoms of a devotee who's making advancement? He's rolling on the floor, he's shouting out, right? There's no kind of peaceful meditation for us. It's Haribo, right? Lots of loud noise. Lots of loud noise and lots of show of emotion. And in this way we can actually tell it's not emotion, it's devotion. Of course, you know, it's not something that we artificially imitate, but it's something that comes naturally from the heart, isn't it? So when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we'll naturally feel emotions. And that's what we're looking for. Otherwise, if we're not feeling the emotions of chanting Hare Krishna, what are we feeling? What are we feeling?
Emotions.
Yeah, emotions. We're going to feel emotions. If you're not feeling emotions, what does that mean? If you're not feeling emotions, what does that mean? Huh? You're dead. Yeah, you're dead. But if you're feeling emotions, especially when you're chanting Hare Krishna, and don't be surprised if it's, oh, this is too hard, I can't do it. Don't be surprised. In fact, that's okay. It means you're making progress. But some people, if they find that, if they find those negative emotions, they say, oh, it doesn't work. Right? Or it's too hard, or my life is bad. But life is bad. So when these things appear, it's good for us because when we feel bad about chanting Hare Krishna, what does that reveal to us? What does it reveal to us?
We are progressing.
We are progressing? Yeah, maybe. Yes? In what way? But what happens if we're feeling worse and worse and worse?
Slowly but slowly we'll get better.
Slowly we'll get better. Okay, yeah. What's one of the benefits of feeling bad about chanting Hare Krishna? Huh? Yes, we become humble. And humble is what is required. Huh? If you want to enter into the realm of bhakti, really enter into the realm of bhakti, we have to realize that actually we're not so good. We're not. Because what happens is a Kanishtha devotee, a beginner, thinks, I'm the best devotee. Right? I'm the best devotee. And sometimes, and not sometimes, but, and Krishna doesn't like that feeling, doesn't like to see pride in his devotee. Right? Oh, I'm the best devotee. I sit in front at the Bhagavatam class and I always ask questions. Right? I'm such a good devotee. Right? We shouldn't think like that. Do you think like that? Huh? Huh? Mum and Dad tell you that you're a good devotee. So we should be thinking, I'm not a very good devotee. And so sometimes if we're not thinking that I'm not a very good devotee, but we're thinking I'm a fantastic devotee, then Krishna trims us down to size. Huh? So that's not bad, that's good. All right, we've got people who need to go to work. And we've got a lot of kids here today. Huh? School holidays is very good. Huh? We get your association, which we wouldn't normally get. Because you'll all be going to school now. Well, you should complain, huh?
Half of the day you're playing.
Oh, half the day you're playing. Mm. He's complaining because he doesn't get any school holidays. He has to come to the Bhagavatam class every day. Okay, Gwantaral Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki jai.